Now, towards the end of our show, I'd like to introduce you to some more examples, I suppose you could say, of behind-the-scenes and possibly under-recognised scientific competence quietly making a difference, like that malaria work, to the day-to-day lives of thousands of people who don't make our headlines. It springs from our university sector and some of the more emerging emphasis on these institutions explicitly and observably performing public good works, quite an addition to the more conventional expectations of educating students by tapping into our great knowledge traditions and also, of course, of undertaking research. I'd like to introduce you to one man who takes this role of more systematic community altruism by universities very seriously. Professor Ian Jacobs became Vice-Chancellor of the University of New South Wales last year, arriving here with his wife, a genetic counsellor with a nursing background, Chris, after a substantial research career in Europe and the UK in early cancer detection, especially cervical and ovarian cancer, and ready, as he puts it, for some professional adventure. Indeed, this takes him into some unexpected regions, which we thought we just might explore with him, because as well as running one of the largest universities in the country, he's just back from a trip to Uganda, and I'll ask him to both tell us why and to set the scene for us there, for those of us who just might be tempted to travel there. Ian Jacobs, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Good morning, Geraldine. It's a pleasure to be on Saturday Extra.
So tell us what's captivated you about this part of the world and its peoples, because this is where we tend to do this sort of story.
Yeah, pleased to. I first went to East Africa when I was a medical student in the 1980s. I had an opportunity to go there on my sabbatical. I fell in love with East Africa. I actually went to Kenya and I was working with in a project looking at the migration of the Lamu tribe from the shore of Lake Victoria into the shanty towns in Nairobi. And so much about the wonderful things and the challenging things about East Africa became obvious to me. And one of the things that people told me during that memorable 2-month visit was that Uganda was the most beautiful and in some ways the most challenging country in Africa. And it wasn't till many years later that I had a chance to go there, and I can say more about that.
Yes, now, when you say the most beautiful, the most challenging, what do you mean?
Well, Uganda is a beautiful country, but it's a country with many, many challenges, like lots of other developing countries. Just to illustrate that, the GDP per capita in Uganda is approximately $600. Mm. In Australia, it's 50,000. So there's a 100-fold difference in GDP. And that's reflected in the infrastructure, in the quality of people's lives, in the support they have, in the health service, in many, many other things.
And in terms of its beauty, because I haven't been to Uganda, but I have been to Kenya, which it has to be one of the highlights of my life, sitting there at the top of the Rift Valley. So does the Rift Valley extend up into Uganda?
Yes, and there are many, many beautiful parts of Uganda. There's mountains, there's safari parks, there's beautiful natural areas, there's waterfalls, there's wildlife. It's a wonderful place to visit as well as to work in.
Yes, because the British used to say it was actually the pearl of the empire. It was under-recognised. And I think after that whole Idi Amin disasters years ago, it sort of infected a lot of our views of the place.
Yes, and Uganda was just recovering from the, or still in the process of recovering from the Idi Amin years when I was a medical student. And of course, as you say, Winston Churchill described Uganda as the Pearl of Africa.
Was
Churchill. It really is the Pearl of Africa. It's a beautiful place, but it has some very serious challenges.
So, I mean, if you were a traveller, before we get onto your Women's Health Initiative, could you go there safely now? You've just come back?
Yeah, there's lots of tourism opportunities. You can go and visit gorillas in the mountains. You can go on safari. It is a great place for a holiday trip, but it's also a great place to try and do something useful.
So tell us about this Ugandan Women's Health Initiative. Dare I ask, why did an outsider need to come in and set this up?
I should start by saying this is very much a partnership between leaders, healthcare workers, and other people in Uganda and outsiders. So this is not something imposed from outside. It is very much a partnership. It began in 2004, so some 20 years after I'd been a medical student in East Africa, I was setting up the Institute for Women's Health at University College London. We had an away event. We 300 members of the Institute talked about what did we want to do, and we ended up with 12 priorities, one of which was to do something worthwhile in women's health in the developing world. And no one had done anything. So we had to think about how could we do this responsibly, ethically. And I was fortunate to meet a wonderful woman called Anne Merriman, who had set up Hospice Africa Uganda. And she introduced us to a team of people at Makerere University in Kampala and Malago Hospital in Kampala. And we went and spent a week with them, thinking very carefully about what could we do that was useful to them. And we ended up with a series of projects, which we then, fortunately, we also, a donor provided us with a substantial amount of money, and we were then able to get on immediately and implement 10 projects. We managed to implement all but 9 of them, and in various different aspects of women's health.
Now, the initiatives run not in the Ugandan capital of Kampala, but in a small city in the north called Gulu. Why set it up there? What was there was a particular social setting, wasn't there?
The initiatives that we started out with back in 2004 through the Uganda Women's Health Initiative were in various places in Uganda, including Kampala, Jinja, and in Gulu. The most recent visit through UNSW has been to Gulu as well as to Kampala. And the projects have involved neonatal resuscitation, preventing babies dying in the first few seconds of life, prevention of postpartum hemorrhage, which is a major cause of death from women during pregnancy. Particularly important to emphasise screening for cancer of the cervix, which is a major problem.
But what I was hoping you'd say is that this was the site of the Lord's Resistance Army, wasn't it? This was this sort of extraordinary story that mercifully is now past, with all the sort of the subjugation of children as soldiers and so on, which was really one of the more appalling episodes of the late 20th century.
Yeah, so this work has led to a particular connection with Gulu. Gulu is in the north of Uganda. It's been a part of the country that has suffered from terrible civil war, massive loss of life and trauma to the population. It's now recovering. And in 2002, even before the civil war was over, some very brave, forward-looking people in Uganda set up Gulu University. That university has prospered. It now graduates 2,000 students a year. And you can imagine in an area of the country like that, the difference that graduates in agriculture, in finance, in medicine can make to that part of the world.
Now, look, you may not know the answer to this, but there could be people listening who say, I'd love to do volunteer for something like that. You know, there's a lot of volunteering tourism around, and we get letters from people. I mean, can people do that?
I think there are lots of opportunities to go to Uganda as a volunteer. In the context of our work, we are in the process of developing the work through UNSW. The work involves health, it involves engineering, it involves water, it involves climate, it involves post-traumatic stress, all sorts of things like that. And I have no doubt at all that there will be great opportunities for our staff and our students and for others to volunteer to take part in that in due course.
Now, look, this is all part of, if I understand it correctly, that you believe that universities have to explicitly do public good and be seen to be doing so. Now, some might say, well, lovely, but isn't that more a role for government and NGOs?
That's a great debate. My view is that great universities are servants of their local community, their nation, and globally. And that is very much the spirit of the UNSW 2025 strategy. We will be excellent and in the top few in the world in research quality, in our educational quality, but we give particular emphasis alongside that to social engagement, social responsibility, and global impact. That excites people in the university. We have so much to offer in that respect. So those things, to me, go alongside each other. If we are really outstanding at research and education, our opportunities for an impact in social justice, equality, diversity, thought leadership, knowledge transfer, and global impact will be all the much greater.
It'll take a lot of time up, though, won't it, to do it properly? I mean, I see the self-interest as well as the altruism that you're describing and understand it. But, gee, it's a big challenge, isn't it?
We're not going to be able to change everything. But if the quality of our research and education gives us an opportunity to have a really big impact in those ways. In my mind, they go together. They feed off each other, because all of those things we do in out in society globally feed back into the quality of our research and education and the opportunities we have. And just for example, we are one of the largest universities in the world in terms of the number of international students we have. That brings wonderful relationships to us. And a great illustration of that is the relationships we have in China, which have led to our recent torch agreement.
Yes, well, you've just, and just this week, and I've just got a minute to go, I read that you'd done this agreement with the key umbrella agency of the Beijing government that oversees 146 parks around China. And this is the first one, I think, outside China in, to bring some money into research. Now, why are you different to the people who want to invest, for instance, or collaborate with people in electricity and real estate, you know, in farm? What's the difference?
The roots of this relationship come from our educational links with China, which have gone on for many years. That has led to discussions about doing research in China. And from there, the idea that China might want to invest in research in Australia. And this relationship in bringing research and economic growth can bring benefits to both nations. So we now have an amazing opportunity built around the torch, this massive Torch Science Park investment in China, to set up a Torch Innovation Park in Australia. That'll bring us research opportunities. It will develop even further our links. And one of the impressive things that I find is that when I go to China now, having had so many Chinese students come to UNSW, many of those students are now chief executives of businesses in China. They want to come back and invest in the university and in Australia. And that, again, that creates opportunities in both directions.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Professor Ian Jacobs, Vice-Chancellor of the University of New South Wales and one of the founders of the Uganda Women's Health Initiative, and very proud of it.
Do you guys have barramundi here?
This is Mike and Timothy,
potato scallops,
the unlikely hosts of a new RN podcast. It's called The Real Thing.
Oh, my, he's just over too high.
Stories.
Intimate stories, scenes, characters, places.
Born of Australia.
We're heading out into the corners to find the real Australia.
The Real Thing.
That's us here.
Subscribe now.